Hi, this is David Self doing the Explore the Bible lesson preview for August the 1st, 2021, entitled, What Time Is It? The background's Ecclesiastes 3 through 4, 6, with the lesson being Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 15. The great American dream used to be a chicken in every pot. That was kind of a pre-World War II kind of political slogan. Materialism, though, has become a god, with mass advertising serving as the false prophet. This study in Ecclesiastes gives several cautions against a mindless pursuit of wealth. First of all, we have perhaps the most famous passage in Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, that the rock group The Byrds made famous in their Turn, Turn, Turn album of 1965. There is an occasion for everything, a time for every activity under heaven, a time to give birth, a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to avoid embracing, a time to search and a time to count as lost, time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to be silent, a time to speak, a time to love, a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. There is an occasion for everything and a time for every activity under heaven. Holman Christian Study Bible said these verses, the most famous text in Ecclesiastes, must be read from the context of the fundamental claim of the book that we are mortals, doomed to perish, and that our work will perish with us. No human work is eternal, and our activities, whether building or tearing down, must change as the situation dictates. We naturally prefer to stay on the positive side of the lift. We want to laugh rather than weep. We want to love rather than hate. We want to have peace rather than war. But as long as we live in a world of change, conflict, and death, we must accept the fact that we cannot have unchanging bliss. Even so, as verse 11 says, everything is appropriate in its time. Mourning and separation are painful, but there is a time when it's right and even beautiful to mourn. We must accept the fundamental fact of mortality. We are creatures who live in time. We must respond appropriately to the seasons as they come. It is a contrast between the temporal and the eternal. During COVID, I think we became less connected with our fellow workers, our many times family members. I heard about an intern in Washington, D.C., who wore a Zoom call, one of the very first ones in April of 2020. She wore a Hawaiian shirt, very loud, very colorful, and no one commented on it. So she decided she would wear the same shirt every single Zoom call. And during the course of the pandemic, she wore that shirt on 264 separate Zoom calls. No one ever commented. They didn't notice. When she mentioned at the end of her tenure as an intern that she had worn the same shirt every single Zoom call, the predominant comment was, "Oh, I didn't notice." And I think that's the temporal nature of our existence. We want to be noticed. We want to stand out. We want things in a positive light. But we have to go with the rhythms of life and realize there are going to be weddings and funerals. There are going to be births and deaths. There are going to be celebrations. There are going to be times of mourning. And we can't let the lows be too low or the highs be too high. When we talk about a time to die, during COVID, the pandemic, it has been a time that I think death has been, you know, kind of in the forefront of everybody's mind. Pew Research Center took the number of deaths due to COVID in 2020 and then extrapolated if each of those people had lived a normal adult life. And they calculated that the deaths of COVID in 2020 robbed 5.5 million years off the lives of people in the United States. As we're going to find out later on, things are temporary. There are seasons. Celebrate the good times. We read in Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to them that love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. Romans 8:28 needs to be seen in contrast to the preacher's declaration here, we're not living by blind faith, nor are we projecting a pessimistic determinism. As Christians, we are in the hands of a compassionate, gracious, long-suffering, and faithful God. So, with that in mind, verse 9 goes on to say, enjoy life. What does the worker gain from his struggles? I have seen the task that God has given people to keep them occupied. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also put eternity in their hearts, but man cannot discover the work God has done from the beginning to the end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and enjoy the good life. It's also the gift of God whenever anyone eats, drinks, and enjoys all of his efforts. Chapter 3, verse 11 is perhaps the key verse in the entire book. He has put eternity in their hearts, suggesting that man can only find true significance by trusting in God. He is powerless to understand the mysteries of the universe and eternity on its own. Chapter 3, verses 12 through 13 records the second occurrence of the book's refrain, under heaven. I remember when Bonnie and I, we were on our sabbatical, and we were actually touring the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, Russia. Some grand old masters in there, but one that really arrested my attention was Rembrandt's The Return of the Prodigal. And it's that familiar story of the prodigal son coming back to the father at the point of his greatest humility and the father's great graciousness. And I remember the tour guide talked about how many felt like this was a picture of Rembrandt as a young man, that he had gone into a wasted life, he felt like. And so it was somewhat of a self-portrait. But here we were surrounded by totalitarian communism, the Russian government. And I remember the tour guide, and what I thought was a pretty bold statement. She was talking about this painting, and we're right there in St. Petersburg, Russia. And she said, to understand this painting, you must understand it as a portrait of redemption. I thought, okay, well, I hope this lady's a Christian, because she's sure getting the gospel in there. Enjoy life. Enjoy life. Holman Christian Study Bible says, the fact that God has put eternity in our hearts tells us that although we are creatures of time, we're not like the animals, who are fully and exclusively creatures of time. God made us as hybrids, so to speak, so that we are temporal, but we also have an inner longing for eternity. We can never fully be at peace in this life because although we are mortal, we yearn for immortality. Verses 12 and 13, I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and enjoy the good life. It's also the gift of God whenever anyone eats, drinks, or enjoys all of his efforts. Holman Christian Study Bible said, the fact that we are creatures of time is another reason to enjoy the days we have. Giving ourselves to excessive mourning and toil is as wrong as indulging in excessive laughter and dancing. He goes on to say in verses 14 and 15, I know that all God does will last forever. There's no adding to it or taking from it. God works so that people will be in awe of him. Whatever it is has already been, and whatever will be already is. God repeats what has passed. A Holman Christian Study Bible gives an interesting comment on this. It says the phrase that God repeats what has passed is literally, quote, God seeks the pursued, or God seeks the persecuted. Such a translation suggests that God cares about and seeks out those who are harassed and oppressed. This anticipates the test on injustice that follows in verses 16 and 17. I think it goes well to mention that traditionally the first Sunday in November is the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. We in America sometimes think we're persecuted because, we're shut down by COVID, or there We live in an age of outrage. But, I mean, around the world, there are churches where literally preachers are being thrown into prison. Christians are being executed. They're being hunted down. The church has experienced more persecution, I dare say, in our lifetimes than in the entire history of Christianity put together. Just because of the enormous numbers of Christians around the globe and the intense persecution that's happening upon the Christian church around the globe. God seeks the persecuted. Let's remember that in terms of the persecuted church. And then God controls life. Chapter 3, verse 16 through chapter 4, verse 6. A, there is universal injustice. Get over it. Just understand. He said, I've also observed under the sun, there is wickedness at the place of judgment, and there's wickedness at the place of righteousness. I said to myself, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, since there is a time for every activity and every work. So this section begins with a denunciation of human justice, which is continued in chapter 4. I remember one time sitting on a board, and we were making a purchase for a training center overseas. I won't mention the country because it could be any number of countries. But it came back before the board that we had spent money in purchasing the land, and now the court wanted us to purchase the trees on the land. And we were all just dumbfounded. We just couldn't believe it that they were coming back for a second helping, you know, you dumb rich Americans. And we thought, what corruption is this? And I remember Rich DeVos was sitting at our table. Rich DeVos was one of the founders of Amway and, you know, did business all over the world. And he said, guys, just get used to it. This is the way business is done around the world. We're going to have to pay off somebody to have our training center. Righteousness, unrighteousness, a denunciation of human justice. Holman Christian Study Bible said, an absurdity of life is that where there ought to be justice in the law courts, there's often corruption, oppression, and a perversion of justice. Even so, we may take comfort in the fact that God has appointed a final day for judging the world. The universal judge, the perfect judge, is God alone. Then there's inevitable death. I said to myself, this happens so that God may test the children of Adam, and they may see for themselves that they are like animals. For the fate of the children of Adam and the fate of the animals is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath. People have no advantage over animals, since everything is futile. All are going to be the same place, all come from dust, all return to dust. Who knows if the spirits of people rise upward and the spirits of animals go downward to the earth? I've seen that there's nothing better than a person to enjoy the activities, because that is his reward for those who enable him to see what will happen after he dies. I remember the little boy going to his mom and saying, Mom, is it true that from dust we were and to dust we will return? And she said, that's right, son, that's in the Bible. He said, then come and look under my bed, because someone's either coming or going. Dust to dust, ashes to ashes. The preacher concludes with the inevitability of death for every living thing. Humans and animals are alike in that they live and then they die. This section should not be used as a text for Solomon's lack of belief in life after death. He makes that clear in his belief in the Spirit returning to God in chapter 12, verse 7. And he also said God has put eternity in our hearts. Pastor Greg asked us a couple of years ago on the team leaders to choose a word for the year. Pray about it. Study. Let the Lord give you a word that's kind of your word for the year. And then he made us a nice little framed depiction, a little photograph with that word. My word was moment, because I'd thought about how Eleanor Roosevelt said we're often crucified between two thieves, the regrets of yesterday, the fears of tomorrow. And I find myself, you know, in my role as executive pastor of, you know, what could I have done differently and what's going to happen next? And I realized that my word needed to be moment. you know, we're going to live, we're going to die, and all we have to celebrate is the moment that's right there before us. Holman Christian Study Bible said, these verses are disturbing to Christian readers because they appear to deny the hope of eternal life. What they actually deny is that people within themselves have the power to transcend death. By contrast, Egyptian religion was so certain that people were immortal that the ancient Egyptians were obsessed with preparing their tombs for the afterlife. According to the Bible, death is an enemy, 1 Corinthians 15:26. It's not merely a doorway to a new level of existence. God's people will experience eternal life only because they are known by God and will be raised by His power. Our hope is based entirely on the resurrection of Christ. The teacher of Ecclesiastes wanted people to take death seriously so they would use well the time they had under the sun. Does not deny that God can raise us from the dead. Then political oppression. We've talked about judicial oppression. Then he talks about political oppression. Again, I observed all the acts of oppression being done under the sun. Look at the tears of those who are oppressed. They have no one to comfort them. Power is with those who oppress them. They have no one to comfort them. So I commended the dead who have already died more than the living who are still alive. But better than either of them is the one who has not yet existed, who had not seen the evil activity that is done under the sun. Holman Christian Study Bible said, returning to the topic of oppression, Ecclesiastes asserts that political corruption is terrible precisely because it does not allow common people to do the thing the book recommends, that is, to enjoy their days under the sun. Oppression is innately wrong, and it also deprives its victims of the freedom to partake of the ordinary pleasures of life. The verse is hyperbole, the use of exaggeration for rhetorical effect. Someone who says, I wish I'd never been born, rarely means that literally. When Ecclesiastes declares that one who has not yet existed is the most fortunate of all, it's merely saying that in an emphatic way that the corruption practice under the sun is a cause for great sorrow. And then in verses 4 through 6, we have the loneliness of wealth. I saw that all labor and all skillful work is due to one's person's jealousy of another. This too is futile and a pursuit of the wind. The fool folds his arms and consumes his own flesh. Better one handful with rest than two handfuls with effort and a pursuit of the wind. Holman Christian Study Bible said Ecclesiastes returns to the theme of wealth, describing how foolish it is to spend one's life in the pursuit of riches. First, Solomon declares that people work hard not out of love for the task, but out of the desire to do better than their peers. The work and the wealth that brings no satisfaction. There's only the pathetic pleasure of beating others in a race for success. Second, a conventional proverb declares that laziness brings on poverty. Against this, verse 6 gives a counter lesson that it's better to have little with peace than to have much with a constant hunger for more. Strong worth ethic is not wrong, but it needs to be balanced with an appreciation for the joys of life. In verse 8, the example of the person who works ceaselessly to acquire but who has no one with whom to share it shows how sad is the life that's governed by a desire for more money. Colossians 3:5 says something very similar. It says, covetousness, which is idolatry, the pursuit of wealth for its own sake. The old bumper sticker, he who has the most toys wins. He who dies with the most toys wins. And then the other bumper sticker, he who dies with the most toys is still dead. We are this fall going to be entering into a period, a generosity initiative. In September and October, you're going to be hearing more about kainos, which is the Greek word for new. And it's about our relationship to money, why we earn the money we have and what we should do with it in God's kingdom plan. There is a spiritual relationship of money to our spiritual growth. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. I heard about a pastor that it had, and I could really relate to this because he had just finished a week-long youth camp and was riding back on the bus with 40 or 60 kids Everybody tired, everybody hungry. They drove up to McDonald's halfway home, and all the kids flooded out, you know, to go get in line in McDonald's. And the poor, tired pastor looked at those long lines and just couldn't bear it. One little boy was still sitting on the bus, and he said, "Rusty," the pastor's name was Rusty. He said, "Ryan," he said, "here's $20. Go and get me a number 5 and bring it out to me, and in return, you can have what's left over to buy your lunch." The boy looked at him really strangely, and he thought, well, I guess he didn't want to stand in line either. But then he found out the end of the story, which was a great application to this verse. The little boy, Ryan, I don't know how little he was, maybe he was a teenager, the night before had realized that money had become a driving influence in his life, that it was controlling him, and he was becoming selfish, he was becoming carnal. Ryan felt like money had a grip on his heart. It was a monster that was clutching at his heart. So he had taken all of his money and put it on the altar that night, even the money that he had to buy lunch on the way home. And so Ryan was sitting in the bus fully expecting to fast lunch because he had given all of his money to God. And then the pastor gives him a $20 bill. "Give and it shall be given. Pressed down, overflowing, shall men press into your bosom. For with the same measure that you give, it shall be given unto you." Randy Alcorn, in his great books on generosity, he said, "Covetousness, the desire for more, is a monster that gets its claws into you. And giving is the stake that you drive through the monster's heart to kill it." I thought it was a great, great metaphor. Application number one, timing may not be everything, but it's often crucial to decision making, to understanding God's will, and to relational well-being. Secondly, eternity in the hearts elevates humanity above all life forms, providing meaning to our lives and gives perspective to all we do. And while ultimate justice comes from God, He expects us to act justly, love faithfulness, and to walk humbly with your God, Micah 6:8. In the Leaders Pack, item 4 is a poster, Worthwhile Pursuits. And we are starting to archive all of our lesson previews at HoustonsFirst.org/ETB, Explore the Bible. I appreciate you tuning in, and I look forward to talking to you some more about Ecclesiastes next week. Bye-bye.